Welcome back to Conversations Different, a podcast from the Santa Fe New Mexican focusing on interesting people and issues of northern New Mexico. This week, we are lucky to have with us the state auditor for the state of New Mexico, Joseph Maestas. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. So let's just start out with like really 101 basic question. What is the state auditor?
Well, the state auditor is really the financial watchdog. It's an office that has the authority to oversee the audit of every single public entity across the state. Well over 1,300 public entities from higher education institutions to acequia commissions.
And not all of those people have the ability to actually do an audit, because I know my folks had an acequia. They were part of San Juan de Abajo, that was ours, in Mora. And I can't imagine who did their audit. If they actually, I don't know if they ever spent any money either. They just got dues and did a few things. But like, what happens to people like that?
Well, for any public entity whose revenues are under $500,000 are not subject to a full financial audit. It's called agreed upon procedures. And these entities that have revenues under $500,000, they're stratified or divided into tiers, six tiers, depending on their revenue levels and their progress in obligating capital outlay. And there's quite a few of those. So it's quite a bit of work. We also have a kind of a quasi-regulatory role in that we regulate the independent public accounting firms that go out and contract with these public entities. They're basically an extension of my office or an agent of my office. So every year we vet these public accounting firms. When we approve them, that gives them the green light to go engage contractually with public entities to conduct their audits or agreed upon procedures.
Okay. And the idea is that if you're using tax dollars, you have to use them in a way that's legal and smart and not waste our money.
That's right. I mean, this is, we're the last stand in terms of accountability and transparency in the management of taxpayer money. And it's an awesome, awesome role. You know, we have people making poor decisions, unfortunately, across the state. In addition to kind of regulating and vetting these accounting firms and overseeing the audit of all these public entities, we also manage the intake of anonymous fraud, waste, and abuse complaints. We average about one a day, and about two out of every three are actionable. Right now, we have about just under 300 active cases. If once we do a forensic or a fraud examination, we get to a point where we make a referral. We'll make a referral to the appropriate prosecuting authority, which is typically the DA in that locale, or law enforcement. With the advent or the creation of the Ethics Commission, we're now making referrals to the Ethics Commission as well. So that's another, I think, new twist to what the state auditor does.
So it's really important then to hold people accountable. And I used to joke when I was editor of the Taos News that one of the retirement plans in New Mexico seemed to be embezzling from public entities. The lunch ladies, whether in Taos schools or in little schools around, were always stealing money. Or, you know, the person in charge of the cheerleading fund. And they didn't usually get charged with criminal charges. So it seems like it's almost like once you get caught, pay some of the money back and go away.
Yeah, unfortunately, white-collar crime is not a priority, I think, in any state, certainly in New Mexico. And I think what that does is it sends a chill to people out there who want to come forward and blow the whistle if they observe any potential fraud, waste, and abuse. And that is state law, by the way. If anyone has any knowledge of potential fraud, waste, and abuse, state law requires that they notify my office.
Nice. Nice. And with 300 complaints, it sounds like you're pretty busy.
Very busy. You never know what comes into the door. One other major function that my office does, and it just started in 2021, it was a legislative mandate, basically mandating my office to work with the courts to review these annual conservatorship financial reports. And we have, based on that initial review, have the discretion to conduct an audit. So this is very different in that we're working with private financial information, and we're doing our part to protect those adult populations that are very vulnerable and that rely on conservatorships. Guardianships are handled by the Attorney General.
Okay, so this is probably in reaction to some of the stories that came out 5 or 10 years ago showing that people were in conservatorship and then they were basically being robbed by the people who were supposed to be helping them. So there's a public role in preserving their assets and making sure they're not being cheated.
There is, and we get about anywhere from 1,300 to maybe 1,600 annual financial reports a year. So it's a high, high volume task. We didn't really get any resources to staff a division to do this. We have about 5 full-time employees reviewing these conservatorship annual reports. So, you know, the office has been pulled in many directions and it's diminished the core function, which is the review of all these audit reports that come in the fall. And they're all staggered based on our audit rules. So we're trying to...
Or in the case of Santa Fe in the spring or the summer or whenever it gets done.
Yeah, municipalities, they're doing December 15th. But again, they're staggered. Oh. That way we don't get totally inundated. We get inundated anyway.
So when you got elected, you had been... You had a job. I mean, you were an engineer. So you have like a private life. And then you were the mayor of Española, you were a Santa Fe City Councilor. What led you to want to have a role as a state auditor when you'd already done so many public service jobs?
Well, you know, serving on the governing body in the city of Española for 10 years and then here in Santa Fe on that governing body for 4, I have a knack for reforming. You know, as an engineer, it's reflexive in that I can see a problem and I have all these optional solutions. And I really felt like maybe I can apply this in a political and public policy setting environment. And so that's kind of how that came together, kind of my problem-solving instinct, my willingness to make government work better for people. Because, you know, in my previous life as a 30-plus year federal civil servant, I was an auditor. I was a project auditor. I took an oath to serve my country in federal civil service. And so I did a lot of auditing from labor compliance all the way to construction quality control, where I had the authority to identify certain aspects of a federally funded project and say that particular element doesn't comply with federal regulations. We're pulling the federal funding for that portion. So that's what I would do. So I kind of had a knack for kind of solving problems, fixing things, correcting an injustice or a wrong. You know, if employees weren't paid the proper wage rates on federally funded construction projects. So it was kind of in my DNA by the time I started.
And then you brought the municipal putting together budgets, knowing what to look for when you get an audit back from the state. So you had a lot of knowledge of what you would be looking at on the other side once you got elected.
Absolutely. I had a fiduciary responsibility really throughout my public service career. And so people think they don't really understand it, but you're really accountable for, you know, the safeguarding of taxpayer money. And so I thought, you know, the New Mexico State Auditor, it's perfect. It's perfect for me in that I have a passion for that. And that's what gravitated me, you know, to pursue, you know, this position. And I'm enjoying it. It's
nice.
Fun.
Well, on that note, we will take a quick break and we'll be back again with Auditor Joseph Maestas.
Thanks, Inez. This is Patrick Dorsey, publisher of the Santa Fe New Mexican. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Conversations Different with Inez Russell Gomez. Great local content is only possible with a talented staff dedicated to bringing you the best local content possible. For that staff to do its work, we need your support by subscribing to the Santa Fe New Mexican. If you're already a subscriber, thank you. And if not, there's never been a better time to subscribe. In addition to our home-delivered newspaper that comes with full digital access, we also provide digital-only subscriptions for SantaFeNewMexican.com. We'll also be releasing more online-only audio and video programming moving forward. The Santa Fe New Mexican has been here for nearly 175 years, and we want to continue being your source for local news and information. Visit us at SantaFeNewMexican.com/subscribe or call us at 505-986-3010. Thank you.
It's a new day in New Mexico, and the doors to boundless opportunity are open as tens of thousands of New Mexicans reach higher to pursue a dream, broaden their horizons, and retrain for a better job. With the New Mexico Lottery and Opportunity Scholarships, you could build yourself a better future anywhere in the state. You put in the hard work, we'll help with the costs. For eligibility details, visit reachhighernm.com.
So when you took over, were you surprised by the size of your office? Do you have enough people to do the work? I mean, obviously, it sounds like you've been given new responsibilities with no new people. But how many folks do you supervise?
Well, fully staffed, we have 41, and six are exempt, which means they serve at the will of the state auditor. We do have an intern program with two at the moment, and we're expanding it to four. But when I took over, I inherited an office that had almost a 40% vacancy rate. All employees were still teleworking.
Oh, wow. Because you came in the middle of the pandemic or right toward the end.
Exactly.
Right.
And so since then, we've come a long way over the course of the last year. I've had a chance to assess the office. And, you know, quite frankly, it has been neglected. We're updating a lot of policies and procedures. We are very aggressively recruiting the best and brightest. We have in my team, we have two former state controllers. I don't think the state auditor's office has ever had two former state controllers in that office. So we have done a stellar job in getting the right people in the right places to staff that office up with qualified people under challenging circumstances.
Right. Where are you guys located?
We're co-located with the Environment Department. We're just kind of down the street from Ranch House and Kohl's, across from UPS.
Okay.
So I tell people, I joke, we're banished to the south side, but we have made a request to be incorporated into the new executive office building that's planned to be built just west of the Capitol, where the historic casitas are.
That's right. That's right. And I was saying earlier to someone, all I care about is, can I get to work and will there be too much traffic? I mean, I think you have to fit the building to the neighborhood while at the same time consider its effects on everything around it.
Yeah, definitely. I lived in big cities, you know, Austin, Washington, D.C., Phoenix, and I've been commuting for the greater part of my adult professional life. And so it's refreshing to enjoy a nice 12-minute commute across town.
No, that's nice. My biggest commute in my life was 30 minutes from Española to Santa Fe. I was a resident of Valley Estates once upon a time.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, the fancy part of Española. On trick-or-treating and Halloween, there would be like a million trick-or-treaters.
Yeah. I remember Valley Estates very well.
Yeah. We had a lady in charge of the water who used to come yell at us because we were trying to conserve water because it was a drought. And she says, "You don't understand. We'll lose our water rights," because I guess we had our own water in the Homeowners Association. Yeah, that must have been fun dealing with them when you were the mayor.
Yeah. A certain notable individual, the owner of the Rio Grande Sun, lived there, I believe, at Valley Estates.
He was around the block from us. Yep. I found that out years later and I was like, oh my gosh. I used to jog through the neighborhood with the baby in a stroller and I was in my pajama bottoms because I was too tired to get dressed. And I was like, I hope he never saw me. That's too embarrassing. Now, when you were campaigning, I remember one of the things you said is that you didn't want to just be a guy in an office, that you'd be on the road, you'd be meeting with cities and kind of doing some proactive auditing in the sense that you'd be telling them, here's what you need to do, here's how you do it. How has that worked out?
It's worked out very well. We've visited already many, many counties. We're engaging, you know, so many folks across the state. We just established the inaugural Municipal Accountability Audit Awards to raise the awareness of having a good audit and the advantages of having a good audit with municipalities. So we've made a lot of progress in doing that. And I've always said it's best to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse, because once it happens, trust is lost, damage is done, and it takes years to recover from that. I think any public entity that is coming out of an embezzlement situation, you know, it takes a long, long time to come out of it. And so I am convinced that the best way to do it is is to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse through education, awareness, being proactive. And I did commit to the people of New Mexico that I wasn't going to just show up one day a week. I'm committed to that office. And we've done a lot to improve policies and procedures. We've installed a culture of professionalism and dedication. And so I'm very proud of what we've done so far, but we still have a lot of work to do.
I imagine that it's very hard for people who were maybe used to not necessarily committing waste, fraud, or abuse, but just not being as kind of being sloppy, let's say. The Governor Susana Martinez had an executive order mm-hmm. that basically said, if your audit isn't up to date, you can't get more money from the state. And I understand in the legislature this past short session, there was an attempt to codify that.
Yes.
And it almost passed, but not quite. Is that right?
That's right. You're referring to an executive order 2013-006. It basically says just that if you're not current on your audit or if your audit has significant deficiencies, you will not receive your capital outlay. Now, it doesn't prevent you from getting awarded capital outlay, but you cannot access your capital outlay. And that has been, I think, one of the best good government policies. Now, it is executive policy, and I feel like we're in the second term of the governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, and I, you know, that executive order could be rescinded at any time. And I think the best thing to do is to really make that the law of the land, to maintain that deterrence, to ensure that public entities have an incentive to have audits that are on time and clean.
And with that, there would be more support, perhaps, for, let's say, smaller governments or, you know, little associations like a, you know, water and sanitation group or something like that.
Exactly. And what has happened over the course of the last, let's say, 10 to 15 years is these small public entities have fallen deeper and deeper into noncompliance. And the old way of assisting them was that the state auditor would set aside 10 to 20,000 for these grants that would be awarded for a single fiscal year. And so I remember signing a grant for a small water district in the northwest part of the state, and it was for 2013, for 1 year. And
So even if they caught up there, they've got 10 more years to go.
10 more years to go. And it's difficult to find an accounting firm to go to the rural parts of the state for a $2,000 engagement for a single fiscal year. So we've come up with a more of a centralized procurement to kind of aggregate all these public entities that need financial compliance and do it through a centralized procurement to stimulate interest on the part of the accounting industry, to make it worth their while, and to accelerate the direct assistance to these small public bodies. And so we've been very successful. We got $500,000 last year. In the way of an appropriation, we've already freed up about $2.4 million in capital outlay. That's a 380% return on the investment with the potential to free up 2 million more. We're poised to receive another million for this program because we still have quite a few of these financial compliance certifications that need to be done to bring all local public bodies in the state of New Mexico back into compliance.
Okay, and on that note, we'll take a quick break and be back shortly with Auditor Joseph Maestas.
Join us on a journey of compassion and community at the inaugural Walk for a Hug 5K community event, proudly presented by the St. Vincent Hospital Foundation. Set your calendars for May 18th via Linda Park, starting bright and early at 9 a.m. We'll share in the joy of community, health, and well-being, walking side by side for a common purpose. Bring your friends and family to multiply the joy and the impact of your contribution.
Welcome back to Conversations Different, where we're talking to State Auditor Joseph Maestas, a former mayor of Española, a former Santa Fe City Councilor. And as auditor, you've had the pleasure of watching your former governing body, the City of Santa Fe, not make its audit goals. And that must be a strange kind of feeling to see they were, I think, four audits or five audits behind. We're now only one behind, and that should be in 2 months, 3 months. And hopefully Santa Fe's financial difficulties in terms of turning audits in on time will be over. How has it been watching that process from the other end?
Well, you know, the city of Santa Fe is a well-resourced city. You know, having served on the governing body, I got to know the caliber of staff, and they've got great staff. And, you know, it's just, I think being the capital city, and I am a citizen of Santa Fe.
Right, right. This is your town.
It's a bit disheartening, but I think that they're making great progress. And I think we're all waiting to see if in fact they will complete the fiscal year 23 audit report by May. But, you know, we have to be independent, and, you know, there's other cities that are, you know, experiencing similar problems. But, you know, as a citizen, you know, it is a little unsettling, but progress is being made. And we hope to see that audit report. But it does harken back to the days when I was on the city council. If you recall, the 2008 park bonds was mismanaged at the best. And I was the only city councilor that raised my hand and thought that an independent third-party audit should be done. And that was the course that was eventually taken. And I think Tim Keller was the auditor of that. So even while serving on the city council, I recognized the importance of bringing in an objective third party to do a financial evaluation in the form of an audit where there is controversy in the management expenditure of public money.
Yeah, I always thought Santa Fe was very clever is probably not the word, but very particular in how it spent money during that period to avoid layoffs, even if all the work that was promised in the public bond didn't get spent. And he said in the audit, Keller did, that it bordered very close to breaking the law. And no one was charged in any of that. But it was I know people were very, very upset because the work that they thought they had paid for did not happen.
Well, it wasn't just the parks bond money because, you know, if you look at it, this was in 2014, 2015, the city was still recovering from the 2008 recession.
Right.
One thing that I had discovered is the stormwater fee that we all would see in our water bill. I looked into that. I'm thinking I wasn't seeing any projects. Yeah. And what I discovered was that those funds, and they're earmarked for basically capital projects to mitigate stormwater and stormwater flow. They were being used to fund the salaries of street workers.
Well, there was a place in the budget where they used to move money from the water fund over to the general fund. And that was, I can't even remember now, the city finance director that they got from Taos. He's the one who found that and exposed it, and they started fixing that.
I think it was the noble effort to avoid furloughs and layoffs, and it was at all costs.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the proper management of public funds, I think, was compromised to achieve that goal.
Yeah, it was an interesting time, and there's always been an issue, you know, way before the Weber administration, this predates him by tons, about cash management and whether the cash balances were being properly reported. And I don't know, were you on the council when the whole thing happened with the parking division? Because they couldn't account for where the money was, and that was a fun.
I came in on the tail end,
yeah.
And I think you've seen how they've just taken away cash management, you know, just systematically. And I think the parking division's better for it.
And I think the poor water department, because I don't know if they're letting people in anymore, but because they stopped during the pandemic. But you know, the viejitas and viejitos used to go pay their money in cash, their water bill every month. Here's my $100, and they had a ton of cash at that place.
If you remember when the city was experiencing a structural deficit, it was about $15 million, I started digging into the water fund. And what I discovered is they were using gross receipts tax increments that really should have been used for the general fund.
Right.
And they were, so really it was indirect, the general fund was indirectly, or I'm sorry, the water fund was subsidizing the general fund. And we ended up restructuring that debt and we moved that gross receipts tax back to the general fund to plug that structural deficit. So, you know, it was extreme. There was some extreme measures taken, I think, that really had to be corrected. And I'm really proud of doing that, of kind of really, you know, restructuring that debt and making the general fund whole.
Yeah. And it looks like when you it's so easy to criticize the current office holders, and they probably deserve, you know, their fair share of it, because you can't run on fixing finances and then have your audit late every year forever. But some of these problems go back years and years and years. And it seems like the goal for Santa Fe, for the state, should be to professionalize your financial reporting so that when I'm paying taxes and you're paying taxes, it makes you feel like your money's well spent.
Yeah. And, you know, it just so happens there's a confluence of all these events, you know, the pandemic, the departure of key, you know, finance staff, the migration to a pretty comprehensive and complex software system.
Right, right.
And so there are legitimate reasons, but I think it's time to start looking forward. And,
right.
And as you said, looking at these policies and procedures and professionalizing financial management in the city.
Yeah, and maybe we'll get our capital outlay dollars that won't have to be run by a third party, and, you know, we can start doing more of the projects that we need to do. Because that's important for citizens, too.
Yeah, I think that's the unfortunate side, too, when you have to, when the capital city has to find another governmental entity to be a fiscal agent to access its capital outlay. You know, it's just one of those unfortunate things. Let's hope as citizens of Santa Fe that the city never has to do that again.
Right. Well, at least we're not as bad as the public schools when they lost $6 million and could never find it. That was many, many years ago. But I remember the citizens of Santa Fe came up with a financial committee and helped them get back on their feet. And, you know, here we are all these years later, and they're doing a great job spending money in terms of accounting for it and knowing where it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the funnest part of your job? That'll be my last question.
I think putting together a team and then watching them kind of gel and come together. We've done some formalized, facilitated team building. And, you know, I'm not a micromanager, but I insist on accountability. And just watching them do their jobs and also, you know, enjoy coming to work. I've instituted a wellness policy to give them 2 hours per week. Before I brought back all the employees on a hybrid telework, I gave them a 15% retention adjustment for up to a year. As a consequence, we only had one departure. We've been having office-wide, you know, recognitions and celebrations, you know, just really coming together as a team and
nice.
Watching the team work, I think, yield positive benefits. I think it's really gratifying at this stage in my career.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes it more fun if your work is like, not necessarily your family, but like a family. And it
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering, as hard as you work, how you get to exercise, because
I have to force fit it in. But in terms of like my exempt staff, they're not allowed to telework.
Right.
I told them you cannot telework. You have to be a model to the rest of the classified employees. And they're doing that. They're really rising to the challenge and performing some great things. And as you said, given our authority and our mandate to do this and cover the entire state of New Mexico with 41 full-time employees. And of course, we only have like 34 or 35 right now. It's a monumental challenge. And hopefully, you know, in coming legislative sessions, we'll be able to articulate some of the challenges that we're facing, because, you know, I don't want the legislature to really be an indirect party to enable fraud, waste, and abuse by not funding my office adequately.
Yeah, unfunded mandates are the bane of
municipalities
and agencies' existence.
And the industry is contracting. There's fewer and fewer public accounting firms. Public accounting standards are proliferating. The profitability is diminishing. I think everyone should be alarmed. This is a 10-year consecutive trend. And I am working with higher education. I'm trying to impart my concerns to the legislature to really kind of set up, take notice, and help us to start growing the industry again, because you have fewer and fewer accounting firms and more work. And so something's got to give. And so we have some challenges ahead, definitely.
Well, that's a great warning and a caution that people should study math more frequently.
And accounting,
yes.
I'm going to make spreadsheets sexy.
Oh my gosh.
That's my mission.
And on that note, this has been Conversations Different with Auditor Joseph Maestas. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.